This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today we wrap up the fourth and final day of the Abbott's get-together here in Colon, Michigan. And we're going to begin this podcast with John Sturck, who is the one who arranges the buskers, that is the street performers, and they used to have a contest. Well, you'll get to hear him talk about all of that on this podcast. And then next we talked with Ted and Marion Outerbridge from Canada. And this is only their second magic convention, actually, they've worked, and they were fantastic. It kind of reminds me of a Time Lord. Now, I'm talking about Doctor Who, and you guys who are fans know what I'm talking about. He was outstanding, and so you'll kind of enjoy what he has to talk about. Next was Shoot Ogawa, and Shoot will tell us a little bit about what he's been up to and what's going on out the Magic Castle in Hollywood and things that he's working on in his life. And then next we speak with Sir Patrick, that is Patrick Thurns. He was the fellow who not only had won first place in the stage contest here at the Get Together, but also was the one at the Magic Live convention who had worked with Joni Spina, and was the one who brought everyone to their feet. It was one of the most spectacular and most talked about events at Magic Live last year, along with Kevin Spencer. Those are the two things that seem to be some real highlights from last year. So we get to talk to Patrick and find out how this has changed his life, certainly. Then we catch up with Randy Wakeman, who gives us an update on Simon Lovell's health situation while he's over in England then right now, and the prognosis, and you, those of you who are following how he's doing, please listen to what Randy has to say as to what Simon's future looks like. And then we're going to wrap up, of course, with Gabe Blackstone. I believe that no convention of the get-together is going to be complete without speaking with the grand lady herself, Gabe Blackstone, of course, the who was the wife of Harry Blackstone Jr., and is a something that is a staple, if you will, for the get-together. The whole thing was pretty much based upon Blackstone Sr. having lived here in Colon many years ago, and, well, you know the history. So I think it's kind of cool, some of the stories that Gay has to share with us also. So enjoy this final podcast from The Magic Word from Colon, Michigan. Well, good morning, Scott Wells, or the Magic Word News. Where are we? It's a Magic Word podcast.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
Thank you, John. Yeah. And it's still early. What time is it? 1 o'clock in
it's
the afternoon?
It's like 12 o'clock.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've been busy uploading the other podcasts here this morning in the library. I'm glad they got Wi-Fi over there.
Yes.
Golly, it's hard to have any kind of service around here in Colon. Anyhow, I'm here with John Sturck. Hi, John.
Hey, Scotty.
People
how
don't
are
know
you?
That. I'm doing great, thank you. Looking good.
Well, thank you.
Well trimmed. Talking about your beard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyhow, you have been working with the buskers this year.
Yes, that's right.
And scheduling it. Tell me a little bit about how this differs from what you've done in the past.
Well, once or twice in the long, long ago, we had a busking contest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit difficult to handle and judge. So they changed it to sort of a sponsored busking, where we have our street performers out at certain designated places and times, mm-hmm. that are advertised and are sponsored by the Colon Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. And so you coordinate the times and the places where each person is going, the days they're going to be working and everything.
Right, yeah. I've got a pool of people that I trust to do a good job, and so we put them in.
But that doesn't mean that prevents anyone else from coming in and just kind of...
No, not at all.
Spontaneously busking.
Not at all, not at all.
Spontaneously busking.
Anybody can come and do a street show if they like. You know, they just... You know, try not to do it when and where my official busker, I say official with air quotes, where they are. So otherwise, other than that, go to town.
Right. And so the last time that they actually had the contest was like 3 years ago or 2 years ago? It was the 75th, I think, a couple years ago.
Yeah, something like that. It was 3 or 4 years ago, yeah.
And in that particular case, were there trophies actually given or a certificate? Or you just
cash prizes.
It was cash prizes.
Yeah, well, that's how buskers prefer their prizes to be.
I would think so. I mean, what are they going to do with the trophy? They have no place to put it. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't fit in my pouch. Yeah.
Now, you specialize really in cups and balls. You did a really fine job of that.
Thank you.
Would you
thank
say that's
you.
One of your specialties?
I would say that's like one of my trademarks, my mainstays. Yeah, that's it's almost like a bit of a crutch.
Yeah.
Because I would like to do other things out on the street, but nothing gets the same reaction as the cups and balls.
And that's why it's been traditional since time immemorial.
Yeah, I mean, we all know it works.
Yeah.
So that's...
Why mess with something that is proven to work?
Yeah.
Now, what do you do in order to try to gather attention? I mean, I see some guys juggling, or they blow a bugle, or bang.
Me personally, I usually start with linking rings.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an iconic... I immediately identifies me as a magician, and not as if I'm trying to run a shell game or anything.
Right.
So I find that helps a lot. And the linking rings is something that can be touched and examined by the spectators as they go by. So I find that works for me. And it doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
And I've tried other techniques, but that just seems to work the best for me.
But what do you do for getting a tip? What's the best thing for getting a good hat?
It's just to be sincere.
Really? Okay.
To be sincere.
And if you can't be sincere, then fake it.
Right, right. Be sincere and be a little funny about it. You know, one of my favorite guys is Bobby Maverick.
Yeah.
And Bobby, towards the end of his show, halfway through his finale trick, he'll stop and say, "Folks, I'm going to pass the hat at the end. I really appreciate your donations. This is my full-time job." And it just gets very sincere and heartfelt. And then at the end, when he does ask for the final hat, he says it again, and he's just sincere and heartfelt. And then he'll throw in a little kicker, like, sometimes I say, "I need gas money to get home."
Yeah.
You know, it's just a little, or "I need some lunch money." So it's just a little.
Well, that's an important thing, I think, as a street performer. You actually have to ask, even though you have a hat out or whatever. You might have a sign that says donations, but, you know, you're saying, "Okay, it's the end of the show, and I do this for free." You have to actually ask for it. That's a difficult thing for some people.
I've never done street performance in Europe or outside the U.S., but inside the U.S., the street performing is a much more uncommon thing, and people don't know how to react to it.
Right.
So you have to instruct them.
Yeah, that's the same thing, I think, like with working restaurants. You know, they don't know exactly. Well, even close-up, people don't know how to respond. It's like when they're on stage, they applaud. But when you're close-up, it's like, "Oh, that's great. Wow." You know, they don't know how to react.
Yeah, I mean, I do restaurant, I would say, is primarily what I'm doing these days as opposed to doing street performance. It's nice because it's air-conditioned. But, yeah, sometimes they don't know, and you say, "Okay, you can clap a little bit louder," and I'll turn around and do a thumbs up in the air. It just proves to my manager that I'm working.
Yeah.
So a little bit louder, guys. You know?
I remember that my close out of thing, he worked at a restaurant, so it had a little rubber hand or something on the end of a pencil.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It had an OK mark.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "If you like it, give me one of these."
Give me one
of
these.
Yeah, so people were giving him OKs all the time. But I think it's important. You got a good point that if you do instruct people how to react and they do applaud, then other people are, I mean, people are going to be hearing others laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people laugh throughout the restaurant at different times, but for them to start applauding, that's going to, you know, cause other tables, I would think, then to say, "What's going on over there? We want them to come over to our table."
Yeah.
You know, the next, and like you said, management knows you're working.
That's right.
Yeah. And so you've been doing street performing and busking for how long?
I really got into it in about 2007.
Okay.
So it's earlier than that. 2006, I think it was.
My so first, really not that long.
No.
Some guys,
No. I mean, my first job out of college, I finished at Michigan State, and my first summer job was to do full-time street performing at this outdoor shopping mall in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
And it was a very safe environment because I got to keep all my tips, of course, but I also got paid a stipend by the outdoor shopping mall that employed me.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I could really work on finding my way how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they say a year on the streets is worth 10 in the practicing anywhere else. So,
right.
My game improved very quickly because of that.
Time and grade, when you're actually doing it. Yeah, that's flight time.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller talk about how pilots need to have a certain number of flight hours before they're licensed to fly.
Right.
I only wish it was the same for magicians.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. So how long have you been coming to the get-together?
This is my 9th or 10th get-together.
You remember your first one?
Yeah. I had won the close-up contest in the springtime that they have here, and Hank Morehouse invited me to come and be in the close-up show at the get-together that summer. And I believe that was 2004.
Okay.
And I remember it because Jay Marshall had died a few months previous to the get-together. And I had no idea who Jay Marshall was. But the opening night, they showed a memorial slideshow. and I could hear everybody in the room sniffling and getting emotional, and I'm just sitting there blankly going, I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
Clearly, he meant a lot to everybody here.
Right.
So that's how I'll remember it.
And you're still working at Fun Inc.?
I sure am, yep.
And anything new? What's happening at Fun Inc.?
Well, there's some new stuff happening I can't talk about.
But it'll be released soon.
It will be released soon. We did release a new trick recently that's a great take on a classic. You remember the double X rating pen?
Oh, sure.
The penny to dime? Well, we've taken sort of that concept and we've put out a trick called Fair and Square. Well, you show a half dollar, and you say, are you sure this money is fair and square and it's legit? We have to have it inspected by the mint. So you pull a roll of mints out of your pocket, and you tap the coin, and it changes to a square coin, so you know your money is fair and square. It's a great little pocket trick.
Yeah. I guess you're kind of looking through the hole in the mint to see how it looks.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you're looking forward to next year then, too? Or are you going to any other conventions this year? You kind of just last one?
This is my third of the summer.
Yeah.
And I think I'm done for this year.
Okay. Quite a few for most people. You don't go to the one or two.
No, I usually just do the one. But, yeah. You know, you had the Magic Ink Convention in Chicago a few weeks ago.
Oh, tell me about that. Don Webber and I just talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote a convention report that hopefully will get published in Magic Scene about it. And it was a great convention.
And about how many people?
It was 100 people.
Yeah.
It was just the maximum capacity of the theater that they rented. It was just action-packed. Yeah. I mean, Johnny Thompson,
Max Maven,
Eugene Berger. They flew in Axel Hecklau from Berlin. Dan Harlan, John Stetson did a show. I'd never seen him before. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
Was it a two-night show, one night, or
three
one
nights.
Day? Or what was,
okay. Three nights, including one of the evening shows was Richard Turner, debuting a new show. That's much more autobiographical.
Yeah.
It's still got plenty of poker dealing and sleight of hand stuff in it, but what I was really fascinated by was hearing his stories from his amazing life.
Yeah. Huh. And are they planning on having this again? This was the first annual or just the first?
Well, it was the 50th anniversary. Sandy Marshall said they'll have it again in another 50 years.
Okay. I'm sure it's very difficult to put it all on and produce it. So
yeah.
I can see where he's coming from. Well, that sounds pretty cool. I was curious, again, about how that went. I assumed that it was a sellout. But
it was a sellout, yeah.
Because they had some pretty good performers scheduled over there, too. Great. John, thanks very much, as always.
All right, thanks, Scotty.
Okay. For the Magic Word Podcast, here at where are we? The Village Market?
We're at the Village Market in Poland.
Right. Having
lunch.
That's right, having lunch. We're having a hot dog, chip, and a soda for a buck and a half. They got rid of the ice cream sandwiches. They had that last few years. They did not have this.
You know, now I feel like I should
got cheated.
Go down I feel like I should go down to Legendary and get some ice cream.
Okay. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Stark from a buddy, Scotty out. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and the matinee show is over, and we had a really tremendous show, and with John Hootie as the illusionist, but I have another illusionist who closed last night's show from Canada, Mr. Ted Outerbridge. Hello, Ted.
Hello.
And Marion.
Hi.
They were the two outstanding people so far here, I think, in the convention, and it's great to spend some time and actually get to meet you. And so whenever that you guys were first book to come down here. You said you haven't worked a lot of conventions before, have you?
No. This is the second convention that we've been invited to perform at. So, and it's been amazing. We're loving it. There's so much history and tradition and so many amazing people.
Yeah.
It's an awesome, amazing, beautiful phenomenon.
So in the other convention, was that in Canada or was that here?
We did a CAM convention in Montreal.
Yeah.
Couple of years ago.
And how about your experience then, Marion?
Yes, I just think it's one big giant family. Like, I just feel like so welcome. Everybody's so nice. And yes, we have to thank many people for making it possible for us to be here. So it's great.
A lot of fun. Now, I think that one of the great hooks that you've got, aside from a great voice and good hair and a great wife, that
thank you.
is just the Time Lord, Doctor Who kind of a thing. So how did you develop that, or what was your creative impetus? Was it Doctor Who?
Not at all.
Okay.
No, I've always aspired to perform magic that comes from my heart, so the time, you know, being grateful for time and the time we have, that's really the what it's all about.
Right.
So, you know, we have a time machine. We travel back in time. Everyone wishes they could do that and,
right,
you know, change the past, change something. Just celebrating the time we have.
So it had nothing really to do with Doctor Who. And are you a fan? You watch the show? Are you familiar with it? Are people saying this about it? Or?
I guess it was Magical Moments in Time was a show we toured with 10 years ago.
Yes.
10 years ago.
Yes.
Then we toured with a show called the Time Capsule Tour.
Mm-hmm.
We were predicting the contents of a time capsule in every city that we played.
Oh.
And now this tour is called Clockwork Mysteries. So it's been over 10 years that we've been
having a time theme.
We're having a good time.
Yeah.
Doing the time thing.
Yeah.
So the, you know, Jim Steinmeier's Lady in a Puzzle turned into a time machine in this show. And the Gypsy Thread is about moments in time. And
7-foot-high alarm clock. Everybody's nightmare in the morning, right, to get up. And
right.
So we have
Disembodied Princess became a 7-foot-tall
alarm clock. Yeah, that's amazing.
The topsy-turvy bottle routine becomes a game show traveling back in time to the 60s, and I'm a crazy 60s game show host. Divided Lady traveling back to 1918 and P.T. Selbit.
I know it's also you keep in costume as well, the
Absolutely.
Period.
Yes, that's right. It's we're basically going from medieval times into Victorian times into the 80s and the 60s and the 50s.
Yeah.
So we love the time theme all the way, and it just, we felt like, you know, we don't anymore have time in our lives. We're always connected to the internet, to cell phones, to whatever. And this is really like celebrating time with the family and friends and just taking the time to enjoy a show and just having fun.
Right. Now, you said also this morning, I think, Marianne, that you have like 13 illusions. You only brought 3 of them here.
Yes,
so
we did.
What are the big illusions you guys do?
We're levitating, levitation,
we have a
sword
museum
basket.
Of time.
Museum of Time is 3 big illusions.
Wow, okay.
We do a switch and I appear in a clock tower. Marion and I change places. Marion vanishes with a large hourglass.
So
she vanishes while she's holding the hourglass. She's stealing the time from us. She's a thief.
And, you time know, thief.
That's right. We
what would you do if time was taken away from you? Kind of message.
Yeah. We have a Argentinian number, which is a tango, but it's happening in a restaurant, like your first date. It's a special time in everyone's life.
Yeah.
And so things go kind of funny at this moment. And
right. Tango flottante. So it's our
floating tango.
Okay.
Levitation, decolleté chair, a few other things, you know, appearing. Champagne bottle.
Yeah. So is this like a big 18-foot trailer? I'm sure you've had like you're touring with it.
Well, the full show is in a 53-foot trailer,
okay.
Like a semi-trailer.
Okay.
That's the full show.
Yeah.
Very practical show. Find yourself a semi-trailer and there you go.
More than just a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and we tour with a lighting designer, director, and an illusion technician, so... We're only 4 people, but there's lots of production.
And when you're touring mainly since it's in Canada, do you cross over to the States at all?
A little
bit. We do a bit. We'd love to do it more. We're working on the U.S. market to try to get it going.
We will be performing in Pittsburgh in October, so that will be very fun. That's our next big show.
Okay. And is that going to be for, that's not a convention, that's actually
That's actually the full
public.
Stage show. It's a public show, it's a family show.
Okay.
October 18th.
Performing Arts Center.
Yeah, Performing Arts Center.
And if they want to get more information on that, where can they find tickets and that kind of thing?
TedOderbridge.com is the place to go. Our website has our tour dates.
Okay. Now, speaking of tours, Murray Hatfield is a good friend of mine and yours as well, of course, and I understand he's not touring anymore.
He is still touring.
Yeah. He's still touring. I'm not.
But he had a different agent or something. He no longer has the same one.
Something has changed. I don't know. Or maybe less.
I don't know.
We don't know. But
you book your own, I assume, then?
Yes.
Okay, you don't have to go through an agent?
We have an agent who does corporate bookings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do a lot of the...
But not your theater tour shows.
The theater tour, we have a business manager, business agent who negotiates for us.
But Ted still works.
Marion and I are also involved in marketing and getting to know all the theater managers.
Right.
Cultivating relationships with them.
Do you have some destinations or locations where you prefer, you like it better, maybe because the dressing room's nicer, they treat you better, or the food's better in this one town or another? Or?
Not really. Like we just. No. But the nice thing is, within Canada, like 95% of the theaters and venues bring us back within 2 and 3 years.
Oh, mm-hmm. So. And you have a different show then?
We usually change about 10 minutes. Okay. Of the show every year, so by the time we get back, there's a healthy amount of new material.
You probably feel that the reason they want you to come back is because they enjoyed that show and they want to experience the same thing again, so you
yes,
can do the same
thing. Yes, and what we do is we like to like not create all the time new illusions, mm-hmm. but like make the illusions that we have just better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think
and
develop.
Isn't there another illusionist, Leclerc? Who is that? Leclerc? Leclerc? John Leclerc? No. I was thinking there was another French. Canadian illusionist that was touring.
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure.
But you're the only one that's really kind of doing this then right now on a regular basis.
I believe we are the most popular illusion show with performing arts centers mm-hmm. in Canada.
And how many years have you been doing it then?
The theaters we've been doing for 15 years.
Okay.
But I've been performing since I was, well, my first professional show was at the age of 12 for $3.50. Okay. I never stopped. I studied marketing in college.
And you learned how to get more than $3.50.
Yeah, I cranked it up to $5 pretty fast. Yeah.
Well, that's in Canadian money, so that's like $2.50.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Just a dollarette.
Yeah. That's why all the hockey teams come to the U.S.
Right.
That's right.
Better
yeah.
exchange.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question is, for each of you, what is your magic word? And that means, what is it that's important to you? What is your motto? It doesn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase, something that is important to you, that that you live by. What is your chi?
Well, my word is passion. I have passion for what I do, and I love what I do.
Mm-hmm. You have to have that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, I did discover recently that I may have crossed the line from passion to insanity, but I like to go with the word passion. But when I was working through the second night in a row trying to finish an illusion, mm-hmm. I realized perhaps my passion had become insanity.
Crossed that
line.
That
thin line.
Yeah. So I'm teetering on the edge of passion and insanity.
Marian?
I think it's celebrating wonders and just
Ooh,
the joy
like
of
that.
Life.
So, yeah.
So that's, for me, I think, the most important part, just having fun and enjoying life.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ted and Marian Outerbridge. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're over here at Jerry Costello's party, and it's a great evening right here on the lake. And I've got one of the stars from the Abbott's Get Together, who was a lecturer, performer, and not only close up but also stage last night, Shuto Gawa. Hey, Shoot.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, and you did a good job yesterday, so you're probably ready to relax because your last thing was your lecture this morning.
Yes, I finished this morning. It was hard to wake up.
I was about to say, what's that like? I mean, 9:30 for a close up lecture. I mean, close up guys don't get up till noon.
Yeah, I know. Like last night, like people said, like I will go your lecture. I definitely go lecture. They were saying that at the bar.
Yeah.
So it's hard. But they came over. That's good.
Yeah, they got up in time in order to make it over there.
Yep.
So you have a pretty good try. I didn't make it over myself, actually.
It was more than 100 people, I think.
Oh, good.
It was really good.
That is good, because I've heard, I think we had about 450 registrants here or something, you know.
Okay, yeah, it was much more than 100, so which was good.
Did you talk mainly about cards, coins, I mean, close up, or did you talk about some stage stuff, too?
Of course, I talk about stage stuff, like a 10-20% stand-up trick, and then other 80 is, close-up stuff. But mm-hmm. Also, I talk about many idea and the theories behind tricks.
Now, when Joshua was lecturing yesterday, he was on the floor and the audience was kind of in the bleachers.
Yeah, I
did
the same thing. Yeah,
I
got an idea from Josh. Yeah, mm-hmm. He has experience, so I took that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's much better and a good connection with audience. I really like live audience, so when I do lecture, also I want to feel the same way. So.
Sure. And I think that is a good way of doing it, because that way you don't have to use a video monitor or cameras. Or
I think video camera and the screen type of situation is a totally different situation, so we need a different skill.
It takes it away, because I noticed that you, yesterday when you were in the close-up show, you kind of looking over your shoulder to see what angle, that making sure they're close enough they can see the hands.
Yeah, so just I don't want they miss some of the good part of act.
And part of that, of course, with using a camera are the angles that the cameraman chooses, and sometimes it's a nuance of your eyes or your gestures or something, that's mm-hmm. a misdirection. And mm-hmm. if they're watching your hands, I mean, I was on television many years ago, mm-hmm. back in the 80s, and I was doing some cups and balls, and I had not talked with the director. and the cameraman.
It's very hard.
And they were watching my hands the whole time, and you could hear the person, you know, that was the anchorman, you know, uh-huh. that was laughing and everything, and I was misdirecting that person. However, uh-huh. I couldn't misdirect the camera, and the camera, as yeah. I went back and looked at it, could see all the loads.
Yeah, it's a different skill set, absolutely. And but also the TV program and the theater show is different too.
Well,
so
sure.
like some people is really excellent with the camera screen theater, and you know, I don't have that kind of experience. So you know that I really like live audience.
Yeah.
So but TV also we have to misdirect camera as one yeah. person plus yeah. the host and other you know personalities.
Right.
So it's a lot of work on the TV, of course.
Now you live in Los Angeles, just a few blocks from the castle.
Yes.
So you're down there like about every night. I'm always
yeah.
good to see you when I'm out there.
Yeah.
So that is kind of the middle of Hollywood and movies and television. Have you done much television work or anything?
I didn't. I have so much experience in Japan. I had many different type of TV in the past, but in the States I didn't do. And because first half of like a six, like I live in the States like 12-13 years, but mm-hmm. almost 6-7 years I had a language barrier so much. So
right.
I still have a little problem.
Yeah, when you came over, you didn't know any English.
I didn't speak at all.
Yeah.
So then you know, like of course it's hard to perform on the TV as well. I don't want to mess up anything, and
right.
you know they don't know about me that much. Mm-hmm. So and you know these days little by little people interest, but you know I'm not in a rush because I already did it in the past. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder, did you find it difficult to learn English once you got over here? Do you watch television or how?
Yeah, like I saw Friends, the
yeah.
TV series, which is you know classic now.
Yeah.
So, but also like I mostly study from a conversation with friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, not just TV friends, like real friends. I mean,
yeah. So all the TV friends.
Yeah, my friends, many of my friends taught me English so well, and also it was the only way to survive in the States. I had
right.
to learn from people and from situation. So. And, of course, a script from performance.
Right.
So, yeah, many way, of course.
Have you had any opportunities to do any movies? Or have you gone out, like, on a casting call or anything?
No, I was interested in the past, but, you know, not really aggressively looking for. So I wasn't looking for the movie stuff. But I never had an opportunity so much. Sometimes people, some of my friends who are actors, they
yeah.
ask me why you don't do it. They said, and I said, just I don't know how to do it. That's why.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If I have opportunity, I don't mind to challenge. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to be in front of camera.
So, what is kind of in the offing? What are you going to be doing here? What's coming up for Shutagawa? What are you planning on? What are you working on?
I mean, January.
Yeah.
I mean?
January. Yeah.
I'm enjoying to travel still. Like you know, these days I miss friends so much. I feel like because I have so many friends in so many different countries.
Oh, sure.
And I can go at least maybe maximum one country per month. So it means like a 12 country a year, so I miss many friends. And then sometimes my friends is in, for example, sometimes my friends had an accident. I want to see them, but
sure.
like I can't go because I have work.
Right.
So these days, especially the last couple of years, I try to decide. I'm trying to visit my friends wherever, whenever. So and I try to hook up some of work because
yeah.
you know some of you know my company doesn't give me the vacation exactly.
Yeah.
So it means I have to make an excuse to go there.
Okay.
But, you know, now my priority is seeing friends more than just you
yeah.
know, making money. So that's, you know, that's important for my life.
When you're saying your company, that who are you working for?
My mentor is my boss, basically. He's
okay.
decision maker. But, like, you know, when he say yes, it's easy. But if he say no, even I want to go there, but I
yeah.
can't go. So I try to convince him to, you know, oh, hey, it is going to be good money. And they
sure.
say, oh, okay.
Can't refuse that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so mainly, do you work for companies, corporations? That kind
yeah,
of shows,
yeah, yeah. Like almost
strolling.
Agent. Yeah, yeah. Of course, like I have a few different managers inside of my company, outside of my company, and they book. For example, some guy book like you know, corporate show only.
Right.
Some people book only Japanese media. Like a walk,
oh,
Japanese
okay.
media walk in the States, perhaps, and you know some people only one person book Japanese walk in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So and you know, when I go back to Japan, I have a show every day because they book my show. So like I have a several way to book, but a corporate show is you know half, and convention work is half these days. I'm enjoying that.
And when you're working conventions, have you got some others that are coming up yet this year? I mean, here we are in August.
Well,
and
I don't remember. That's funny thing. I don't remember exact date and exact place, but I am sure I'm gonna be busy. I'm gonna go back to Japan. I have a show around early September, half month. I have a show every day, and then you know little lectures and stuff. And believe it or not, I speak Japanese really well. So that's why like you know I can do
better
good,
than
like,
I do. Your so, English is better.
So then, but you know, October I have a convention in I think Reno. I think Larry Wilson, he's organizing some of public show plus some of convention together, which is quite exciting. And also the November, I think I have a convention in actually close from here. I think in Detroit.
Okay, yeah, just a few hours.
And then December is like off season for the magician. Sometime after the Christmas Day, basically we are kind of slow. But Japan is the busiest time. All December is really busy.
So do you go back to Japan during December
mostly,
in order to do the work there?
Last year to this year, I stay in Japan a month and a half. Mm-hmm. The showing every day, had a show every day, and some of the special lectures, workshop between. So I really had a packed schedule all December to January.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna do it again this year. So
yeah. I keep pretty busy, obviously, during December because there are a lot of corporate shows that we have that we're performing.
Yeah, these days it's banquets. Better, right? Because the economy came back.
That's true.
We feel so it's good things. So, but my friends told me, 2008, 2007 at the time, all corporate gig went to down. So, but still Japanese gig was there, so I always went to back to that.
Do you have a particular show or something that you have performed, or a place where you've performed before, or a group where you've performed that stands out in your mind as one of your most fun times, or the most beautiful place that you've stayed or performed, or the audience was the best?
You mean a theater, or a situation, or a country you're talking about?
It could be a situation. It could be that you got booked to work. I remember being booked to work in Cabo San Lucas one time. That was great. And a beautiful golf course resort. Doing a show.
For example, country wise, I like Argentina and Spain because just I like Latin people.
Yes.
They're very easygoing, friendly. But also that if we work as a performer. Magic Castle is going to be the one of the best place. We can hang out with everyone.
Yeah.
And people come over from everywhere.
Sure. So, it's kind of they do. People come to your house.
Yeah,
and then they come to Magic Castle.
Exactly. So that's a great thing. And in Japan, these days I feel more walk and walk. So less pleasure.
Yeah.
And then, also inside the States is fun. I miss many friends in the States. But I have a basic rule. If I go any country, any place, any city, I look for the friends who I know already.
Yeah.
Because if I have friends, this trip going to be brilliant. And if I don't have it, sometimes we get trouble. Taxi driver could be very unfriendly.
Yeah.
And anything could be happened. So, I always look for the friends, and the friends makes my trip better. Absolutely.
Well, I know you have a good friend with Nelson. So he's
he's a very good friend. Yeah, he's very supportive. So.
Yeah. So be sure and tell him hello for me, by the way.
Yes.
When you see him back over there.
Yep.
All right. Well, great. Good talking to you, Shoot.
Thank
had
you.
A good time working with you over here and seeing everything that you've been doing and performing and lecturing. And so, good luck in the future.
Thank you very much.
Good. That was Shoot O'Gallo for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. We're still hanging out over here at Jerry Costello's place, and everybody's here this afternoon. It's 4 o'clock or something, and beautiful on the Lake Palmer. And I'm here with the winner of the stage contest for Abbott's Get Together for the 77th annual, and it's Sir Patrick Thurns. How are you, Patrick?
Hi, how you doing?
Do you go by Patrick or Pat? What do you prefer? Patrick,
I'm easy.
You're easy, okay, so
whatever.
Sir, just call you, hey, you.
Yes.
This is your kind of answer to whatever people are going to be calling you over
yes,
there.
I've been called a lot of stuff.
That's right.
Some stuff I can't say on the podcast.
I was wanting to actually get with you last year whenever that we were, you and Joni had worked together after Magic Live, and that was such a highlight would you say that was kind of a turning point in your life and your career?
Oh, absolutely. Joni and the people at Magic Magazine and Magic Live truly changed my magic life.
Yeah.
Truly changed my magic life for the better. I mean, Joni is an absolute saint, and I cannot speak any more highly of her, and we just need to get all the prayers and help that we can give her.
Yeah. She's really going through some really tough times right now, and she's, in the hospital, getting a blood transfusion and everything in Houston, and back my home, so hopefully she'll come through and get the organ transplanted, that she needs. Now, did you have other people who were friends of yours? I understand you did have some people who had given you some suggestions and some advice on your show.
Yes, before I worked with Joni, one of my main mentors is Artie Kidwell.
Yeah.
He's one of my main mentors. He's a guy I go to and just show everything I do, and his two expressions are, okay, you want me to lie to you, or do you want me to break your heart? And I feel like I need somebody like that, somebody who can just not candy coat stuff and just tell me honestly, this isn't working. Just leave your ego at the door and just make it better. But it was him, Mike Miller, and some other people from the SAM when I first started competing, taking me aside and just saying, you're trying to be something you're not, and that kind of prompted me to get in touch with Joni, and as I say, the rest is history.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you wouldn't mind just telling a little bit of the story, because for those people who may have been under a rock for the last year that don't know about you and your story, because, of course, it was a magical life, and we had, you know, what, 1,600 people there, plus it was in the write-up in the magazine and everything as well. Tell briefly kind of what the story was then.
I wanted to improve my act, so I got in touch with Joni Spina.
And how'd you do that, by the way?
She offered a video critique service.
Yeah.
So I sent her my video, paid her fees, and she would send me a DVD. She would watch the DVD I sent her. She would send me back a DVD of her critiques, suggestions. I would take that, work on it, go try another contest, send that back to her. I did that roughly about 3 times and started working on the act with the suggestions she gave her. So finally I sent her a new video of the character I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And apparently when she viewed it, and I've heard Joni say this many times, that when she got done viewing it, she literally fell out of her chair because she said it was a complete 360 degrees.
Yeah. Well, actually, 180. 360, bring it back where you started.
Yeah, you're right. 180 degrees. And she called me up and said that she's going to be doing Magic Live, and she wanted me to come out and do the presentation with her. I almost turned it down because I didn't know what I was getting into. I've heard of Magic Live, but I didn't know what it was. Artie Kidwell, Mike Woodward literally took me aside and said, you are, and I'm going to censor this, you are going to effing do this. If you don't, you're going to kick your effing behind. Because they say, even if you bomb horribly, you get to go to Magic Live for free.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So,
and you've never been out of, you live where, here in Michigan? Or?
No, I live in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, and you hadn't flown out of Cincinnati?
No, I haven't been on an airplane since before 9/11.
Yeah.
So all that was very new to me. I'd never been to Las Vegas. And it didn't dawn on me until I got there, actually the night before, that I was going to be, as they say, in the big room.
Yeah.
I just thought I was going to be in one of the little side rooms, just doing my presentation. I didn't know it. I honestly, I didn't know it was going to be, as they said, that big of a venue and that big of a deal. I had no idea it was going to be that big of a deal.
So what did you think or say or do whenever you saw this? They said, no, I'm not going to do it? Or you kind of bolster your courage and say, I guess I'm doing it? Or what went through your mind?
They
lovingly, Vegas, a big showroom.
Yeah, they lovingly kicked me in the behind and told me to do it. So I told Joni I would. And we, for about 6 weeks, Skyped. We set a time every day, and we Skyped for about 3 hours a day, working on the act. But when it got closer to the time of the convention, she wanted me to come out. I'm trying to remember this. 2 days before the convention started. So I flew out there 2 days before to work with her in person. This was the first time I ever met her in person, because the rest of it was Skype. And she was very warm and gracious. And
beautiful lady,
She is a beautiful lady. I mean, she is absolutely selfless.
Yes.
She did. She is. Actually, yesterday when she found out I won,
Did she call you?
No, she texted me.
Yeah.
And she was still giving me ideas and critiques. And I'm reading
from her hospital room.
And I'm reading these texts going, I appreciate this, but you should be concentrating on getting better. But that just shows. That just shows what kind of she doesn't think about herself. She puts others before her, and that is why I feel unworthy that she saw something in me and wanted to bring that out.
And she did. You know, really. Now, one of your goals was lifetime kind of bucket list. You wanted to work the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
And
I got the opportunity to work the castle.
They saw you.
Yes. I performed there during the Christmas holiday, the week of Christmas. So
tell me about that experience.
Talk about humbling. Actually, as if Magic Live was humbling itself right there, but this was just a whole different level of humbling. I mean, I went to a place and got to perform in a place that a lot of magicians that are serious in the business would literally give their right arm to be able to perform on in that venue. And I got lucky enough that I had Joni, John Armstrong, Doc Eason just go to bat for me and tell Jack.
Mm-hmm. You got to have this guy.
Yeah. I mean, Jack had the ultimate say because he's booking, and he wanted to see a video, so I sent him the video, and I got a call from him, and he ended up booking me.
Yeah. And how was your reception?
It was absolutely...
I mean, did people love you?
Yeah, I mean, I consider myself just... I don't consider myself like a big name or anything.
You're bigger than you think.
Well...
You're a humble guy, though.
Well, thank you, but... I mean, I consider myself a nobody in magic, and I'm off stage, and when they say, and when the MC, Matt Marcy, said, ladies and gentlemen, he performed at Magic Live, one of the biggest magic conventions in the world, and we brought him here, ladies and gentlemen, this is his first time here at the castle, the magic of Sir Patrick, I'm off stage, and the crowd just goes nuts, and I'm off to the side going, what the hell? I'm a nobody. And the best part about the castle is the people there are there to see magic.
Right.
It's not like just going to an event and doing something. They are there for a specific purpose.
Right.
And I remember the first time I walked into the castle, John Armstrong and Jack told me to come up the night before.
Yeah.
Just to get a feel, see the shows, and just kind of hang out. So I did that, and I walked up, and I'm standing in line, waiting to get everything, and the doorman's coming up and checking everybody's ID. He looks at me, and he says... Are you one of the performers? I said, yeah. Then he says, come here. Takes me in front of everybody in line and ushers me in. And then he shakes my hand and he says, welcome to Magic Castle. You're about ready to work. I'm sorry, I stutter a little bit.
That's all right.
So he said, welcome to Magic Castle. You're about ready to work at home.
At home, yeah. Welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I love about Jack Goldfinger. He said, welcome home. Whenever that you're there, shake your hand. It's like,
yeah.
It is home. You know, so
yeah.
You're part of the family then when you work there.
Yeah. Jack was absolutely gracious. Can't even begin to describe.
Yeah.
I mean, he made sure I was taken care of. He absolutely made sure I was taken care of there.
And so every night and every show, everything hit and you just had a great time?
Well, just like any show, there was a little bit of, you know, gremlins and just the nature of the beast when you perform. But the overall reception was excellent. Apparently, I did well enough that Jack wants to see video of the new stuff I'm working on.
Okay.
And from what people are telling me, there's two emails that you can get from Jack. One is simply, thank you for performing at the Magic Castle. The other one is, thank you for performing at the Magic Castle. We look forward to your return.
Yeah.
I got that one.
Nice.
So I'm guessing I did something right.
Yeah, I guess you did.
So, because I'm still trying to learn what stuff means when people say that. Because I'm still learning. I don't want to say the inside secrets or anything, but...
Yeah.
And this probably isn't sounding right, but...
You're speaking from your heart. That's important.
Yeah. I'm just still trying to pick up and learn as much as I can about everything.
Right.
In this business.
How long have you been doing magic, actually?
Started magic when I was 10 years old, actually. My parents...
So it was like, what, 3 years ago?
No, I'm 33.
Okay.
My parents actually got me my first magic kit when I was 10 years old, hand to God, simply because they didn't think I was smart enough to figure out how the stuff worked. Because I was a child, I'm a little bit dyslexic, I have ADD out the butt, and it was something that kept me quiet, was the main thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, here, take this, this will keep them quiet. And it ended up horribly backfiring because I suddenly became very addicted to it. And I always loved magic, but I never really performed for people. I just kind of did it for myself. I was in and out of the hospital a lot as a child. I was actually born with a disinformed spinal column, so I have a metal rod welded to my backbone. So I was in the hospital for about 3 weeks because of that as a child. So I was there with a deck of cards in my hand, watching TV, doing stuff, trying to whittle away the hours in the hospital bed. And then got to high school, started doing the plays and musicals. And I did that all the way up till the time I was 22. I worked, I directed a few shows, I sang. I'm actually a trained baritone singer, so I started out in musical theater and song and dance. So,
what was your major?
I got my theater training, as I say, in my first lifetime.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I recently just graduated from college in May, which took me 10 years to do, going off and on and some personal stuff coming up in between. But my degree is in liberal studies, or general studies, as it's defined. But I consider myself a retired actor. And now a magician. I mean, I always was a magician, but I retired from the plays and musicals and wanted to focus more on
now,
that.
Now, do you do this on a full-time basis as a magician, or do you have another occupation?
I'm trying.
Okay.
As we all are, I'm trying.
Yep, that's true. We all do.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
As much as I can. I'm trying to work as much as I can.
So what's your future? What? Start to wrap up over here. Well, you know, what kind of way are you thinking about long-term or short-term? What's in your next year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year plan?
I just want to work. I would like to play the castle again.
Yeah.
Maybe compete a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I get good enough, maybe be asked to work a couple conventions.
Yeah.
But I don't want to just come out and say I want to do that. I want to earn it.
Yeah.
So I just want to keep working, keep performing, and keep trying to make people happy with my magic.
Great, great. Okay, well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So my question then, Patrick, is what is your magic word? What is it that's important to you? What is your motto? What do you live by? What makes you wake up in the morning? What's your chi?
Wow, you're getting philosophic now.
Yeah, a little bit.
Love.
Love?
Yeah.
I like that.
Love. You have to love the people that are around you, and you have to love what you do. Because without love, nothing else matters.
And understand, from your Facebook post, you recently fell in love with lovely lady, too.
Yes, I did. Her name is Chelsea. She is the love of my life, and
love is everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And you got to love your audience also.
Oh, yeah. Because without them, we're just up there doing.
Yeah. And they need to feel that love.
Oh, yeah. I try to connect with my audience as much as possible.
Sure. Yes, you got to connect.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Patrick Thurns for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me still over here at Jerry Costello's party, Randy Wakeman. Hi there, Randy.
Hi, Scott. How are you? You look great.
Why, thank you. It's good to feel great.
You got that colon look to you? You probably did that all yourself, didn't you?
I did. I dressed myself this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, I wonder if Simon's dressing himself. Now, you've been keeping up with Simon Lovell, and I wanted to kind of get an update and give us kind of his health. You've got a good blog that you've been keeping with that, so...
Simon's vastly improved. As most people know, he's back in the UK.
Yeah.
He's enrolled in the British healthcare system. He's currently hospitalized, but he's in a very good facility, according to his father. His father's very happy not only with the facility, but with the attending doctors and nurses. Apparently pretty nice. A nice outdoor garden, and it's very clean and very orderly. So, yeah. Top notch. His dad's very, very impressed. His dad, Tony Lovell, is 83 years old.
Yeah.
And he's been around. He's had a career in law enforcement for 37 years.
Okay.
So, he's seen a lot of things over the years. So, he's hopeful. Simon is improving. He's behaving. He's listening to the doctors and the nurses, and not so resistive.
Obviously, off alcohol. I mean, cold turkey, I guess.
Yeah, not drinking, not smoking, playing with electronic cigarettes. He's allowed those.
Okay.
He's recently been approved for day trips, so his dad can check him out.
Yeah,
and they can go shopping or drive in the country and, you know, for variety's sake, get reintroduced to society. And he's having fun with some of the other patients. Of course, they all have varying levels of problems, but Simon's been playing some chess and backgammon and performing some magic, so he's becoming more sociable and, I think, more comfortable. It's a dramatic change for him, obviously.
Yeah.
But more comfortable, and under the circumstances, things are becoming more and more hopeful. It's certainly not a quick fix. Something that should be looked at probably in maybe 6 month increments.
Yeah.
You know, how is he by Christmas?
Very slow,
is he next year? Yeah, it's a long way back, but there's certainly light at the end of the tunnel. And the lead psychiatrist that was attending Simon at first was very, very skeptical that there could be any significant progress at all.
Yeah.
But now, the last meeting that his father had with the lead psychiatrist, actually with four doctors and two nurses, everyone was surprisingly positive, and they're happy with his progress, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Now, you accompanied him over to the UK from New York, didn't you?
No.
No, you didn't go over? Okay. But I understand once he got over there, I was reading in your blog that he had to be restrained and was attacking people
with
the garden gnome or something.
He had a problem. He went straight from the hospital. He had multiple hospitalizations in New York. He went straight over there, and the intent, he was going to live with his father. His father has an extra room, private room, extra bathroom, big house.
Mm-hmm.
Simon's mother passed 3-4 years ago, so his dad lives alone. His sister's over there as well. And that was the plan.
Yeah.
But Simon wasn't ready for that, and he just, you know, he's had a lot of upheaval, a lot of changes
right.
in and out of the hospital. It's just been chaotic for a long time.
Yeah.
So, he had a rough time, and when he first got there, yeah, he just wasn't making any sense, was behaving erratically, and it took his dad called the paramedics, and the paramedics apparently couldn't do much, and so he had 3 squads in this sleepy little area at the end of a cul-de-sac, and 8 uniformed officers, and
wow.
Simon's
had
been
hot. Training, yeah.
Well, I think they talked him, quieted him down after a long night.
Wow.
But, so that was, it was scary for his father.
Sure.
And
so it's going to be just a long road and baby steps.
But that was the absolute worst, and he's certainly vastly improved since then.
Yeah.
So he's got top-notch care. His dad's very satisfied with that.
Good.
And I said, from that to today, he's doing much, much better. So where it didn't, certainly very serious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like a bad cold or something like this.
Right.
I mean, it's a very serious situation. But he is improving, and things look better all the time. I mean, just talking with his dad on the phone, his dad sounds more and more hopeful.
That's so good.
And there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
It's just that it's a long tunnel.
Sure.
And I don't know how you'd equate something like this, but let's say if you had a stroke.
Yeah.
I mean, you really have to relearn how to do things, and Simon has to relearn how to do a lot of things. And it's a big lifestyle change.
Right.
I mean, as you know, being an entertainer, alcohol and the fun stuff, it's always available.
Sure.
I mean, to a professional entertainer.
Yep. And you're working late night, and the bars are open late, and, you know, you can't, you're up, and you can't go to sleep.
Yeah, sure, and you work for some high-end clientele.
Right.
I mean, some nice parties. They're happy to have you join in.
Sure.
And some people will, as a professional entertainer, people will pay you to party with them sometimes.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I know that. And some of the greatest and brightest talents we've had in Magic over the years have had problems because of that. I mean, some absolutely fabulous performers.
Right.
And some people
just can't deal with it.
Well, and other people have stopped and gone on to be very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like Don Allen, for example, had his episode, but of course went on and became a magical superstar. I mean, put his kids through college and had a wonderful career.
Right.
So,
And hopefully that Simon will get through this and
Simon's got a lot of friends and a lot of good wishes, and his dad was astonished at the number of people that donated to his fundraiser.
Yeah. Yeah, you raised so far, what, like close to $9,000 or something?
Yeah, the contribution is something like $9,300. Mm-hmm. You have to put in a goal, so I put a modest goal in at
$6,000.
But that took care of, satisfied Simon's landlady, took care of the storage and shipment of all the stuff.
That's what I was going
to
ask about.
Back to the UK.
It did, okay.
The air travel for Simon and Jeff Mochy, who went with Simon.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was you or Jeff, but that's right. Okay.
Jeff Mochy. So it took care of all that. And beyond that, Tony Lovell just received a cashier's check. A couple days ago he emailed me, and so he got a nice chunk of change beyond that. So
nice. There's been an outpouring from the Magic community for him.
There has, so it's no big financial hit to his father, who's 83 years old. And
on fixed income, as a pensioner, I'm sure, over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's done well, but certainly not overly flush, I guess. He's not unflush, but I don't think he's overly flush. And there are a lot of expenses, as you can imagine, anyway.
Sure.
I mean, just close, and as things go on, the goal for Simon is would be an assisted living type facility where he'd had his own apartment, his own private flat. He's been approved for this with British Social Services. They don't pay for it all, but they do pay a generous percentage.
Yeah.
And it'd be his own apartment where he can do exactly what he wants, but he would be checked on periodically
mm-hmm.
by security people just to make sure nothing crazy is going on. And, of course, it would be convenient as far as follow-up care.
Do you think there's any chance for him to ever move back to the U.S.?
No. I don't think that's a possibility. But it's all speculation.
Sure.
Everybody's an individual, and who knows?
He's going to progress at their own rate.
Sure. So a lot of it, he's being given, there's a lot of love there, a lot of caring, and he's being... Human beings have their limitations, but he's being given the best chance that human beings can
be given.
In the States. So who knows? Simon surprised people before.
Yeah.
If he improves and he doesn't go back, if he stays away from bad habits for good, mm-hmm. certainly no reason why. I mean, he couldn't write, perform, lecture. Certainly in the
right.
UK.
Right.
I don't. His dad is. According to his dad, no, Simon will never be moving back to the United States.
Okay. All right, well, good. Thanks, Randy. I appreciate the update.
But he's doing well. I mean, it's serious, but it's more hopeful than anything else.
Good.
So
it's hopeful.
It's been progressively getting better every week
right.
for some time now. So it's a good thing. And thanks to everybody who's donated, and people can always write to Simon, care of his father.
And also the website. Where did you have?
Well, the fundraiser was, you used to do a search at Simon Lovell. It's GoFundMe.com. It was where I've never done a fundraiser before, but this worked out very, very well.
But you're still posting some updates on that website.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, and as his father sends things along that he asked to be posted, then I...
Put them
then I do post. I'll have another one in a few days.
And that's on to the GoFundMe?
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it up permanently.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people worldwide, not just the States, a lot of people in the UK and throughout Europe posted their experiences and memories and very kind, generous things about Simon, their appreciation for Simon. And that'll just stay up in perpetuity because Simon will get some, some comfort, some enjoyment from reading that. The folks at the Magic Circle reinstated him, which is very generous, very, very nice.
Right.
So, the Magic community has done a fabulous job showing their support for one of their own. So it's really, it speaks well of magic in general.
Yeah, generosity of everyone in magicians. Well, good. Randy Wakeman, thank you very much. I appreciate you updating us.
Okay.
For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. Hello, Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and the evening show is over, and it wouldn't be complete to talk about all the get-together if we didn't have Gay Blackstone, and here she is. Hi, Gay.
Hi there, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. And so we were talking about some of the exciting things, like this evening.
Tonight's finale was phenomenal. Years ago, we used to always have Carol Fox, Abdick, and Howard Flint, a group of Dorney, put together the finale, which was a satirical outlook of all the shows during the week.
Oh,
and it was hysterically funny.
It was just a spoof on different things that people had done.
It was a spoof, and it was always the last thing.
Yeah.
And, and people who didn't even see it, it didn't matter, because when something is funny, it's just funny.
Yeah.
If you saw it, then you were a double level of understanding it.
Exactly.
Well, tonight, having the water fountain finale that we had was hysterical. I literally had tears. I was laughing so hard.
It was very funny and very original, I thought.
Because the difference is, people don't understand, if they've never been here,
mm-hmm.
that the Abbott's get-together is not a magic convention.
Right.
It is not like any other, because it is not a convention. It is a get-together.
Right.
And, be it kids underneath the street lamp in town, sailing cards at 1 o'clock in the morning, or whatever it may be, it's a whole different atmosphere. You feel like this is probably the way it should have been, and it probably was, in the 20s and 30s and 40s. It's a much more gentler time here, and I think it's one of the things that makes us all come back.
And it's continuing to grow, because I see a lot of youth involved. So it's not a lot of people, in wheelchairs and crutches, whatever. There is just a ton of young people who are embracing this. the same lifestyle.
It's interesting. I've been to several different magic conventions this year, all of which were good, but I don't think there's been any convention / get-together that had as many young people as they do here.
No, I would tend to agree. They had a very big size of, what, 450 people or so, I think, a good group of registrants who were here. And as you said, it was a good cross-section. Not everybody's old, not everybody's young. It seems like everybody was getting together and having a good time, and everybody made friends, met new friends.
But I think there are more young people here than at most of the other. And maybe it's just the style of it.
So, were there any things or memories that come to mind of something that from past? I mean, you've been coming here for how many years? Several.
Oh, I've been coming here for several. Yes. Let's see. Since 1975, I've only missed 2 years. And 1 year we were on Broadway.
Yeah.
And another year we were in Las Vegas working. So we were only.
And I heard that you had taken the Broadway show here. I mean, that Harry had done the...
No, not the Broadway show. But what we... I mean, we did parts of things through all the years.
Yeah.
But we rehearsed the first time Harry was going out to do an evening show. And we were the first half of shows at Harrah's at Lake Tahoe. And the second half of the show were Superstars.
Okay.
And it was rehearsed and opened here on a matinee in the auditorium, in the gymnasium, before there was air conditioning, on a Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock on a very hot day.
Yeah.
I was inside of illusions that I had never done that were finished painting.
A hot box inside of a hot box.
At 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they finished painting them. This was at 2 o'clock. Dick Zimmerman is on the outside of one of them talking me through it.
Yeah.
And I appeared wearing a white wool leotard that Harry had bought from the ice shows. And Harry said, oh, look, she emerged from the sauna. And P.S., I had not done magic, or at least very much of it. So, yes, it was the sauna. So,
oh, my gosh. You're not going to be alive. They don't keep dogs in cars that long.
That's true. Yes, it was close to dying. And then another time, we were coming back from Trinidad, and our illusions didn't make it back in time. And Ab Dixon had the zigzag from the magic show that he was giving to Bob Lund. So I wound up using that zigzag during the show.
Now, zigzags are a different size, and usually they're fit for a person's height.
Oh, so, well, they never bothered to tell me that. So
you kind of learned the hard way. You fit. You zigged and zagged.
Much better than the one that we actually had. Because the one that we had was the original one made with permission in this country. And it was Harbin, but it was made by Owens. And it was really made more for Gertrude. Well, Gertrude's like 7 inches taller than I am.
Yeah.
So when I was doing it at one point, Doug was there with Harry. And because Harry said, she's having a problem. I can't understand why. So Doug is peeking in through it. And he said, she's hanging on the door. And Harry said, no, that's not the way it's done. Doug said, she's hanging on the door, because that's how I was doing it. I was hanging on the inside of the door.
Yeah.
That's how I was doing it.
Okay.
And I had lots of extra space because I was hanging on the door.
Yeah. Wow. Seen a lot of the... Do you ever carry a flashlight with you?
In my purse, yes.
No, I mean, like when you're like inside?
Oh, never? There's no time for things like that. Oh, there are lights in a lot of the things.
Yeah.
You know, there are...
A rack of light somewhere.
And there's also actually lights that are put in things.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I mean, they're push-button lights.
I just never thought about that from the assistant's point of view,
which is
completely different
from
the outside.
So a lot of things have extra lights, shelves, all sorts of little, miniature comfort, creature comfort, air holes.
Yeah. What's the longest you've ever... Do you remember having to hide someplace?
We were doing an industrial show in Reno. It was for Honda Motorcycles for their Aero, and we started out doing it, and we used the drum as the O in it, and we had all these other pieces that looked the same, and the Reno, the letters, turned into Aero, and that was it. And the whole original concept of it was this was set on stage as people were coming in, to the theater and all.
Right.
No one thought about the fact that I needed to already be in it.
Okay.
So I was in it 42 minutes before the show started.
Oh, my goodness. All cramped up and...
I wasn't cramped up, but the drum is not exactly a large piece, especially because I had a headpiece, a torch, three giant flags, and 52 American flags.
42 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's just hard to imagine.
Yes. which is why years ago Dick Cavett said to me, if I ever wanted to divorce Harry, he would testify for cruel and unusual punishment.
Fair enough. That's good. Well, listen, you know, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. Let me ask you, what is your magic word? What is important to you? What do you live by? What is something that that makes you want to wake up in the morning, that gives you life? What do you love? It could be a word, or a phrase, a sentence, or something. What do you love?
Friends and family. Mm-hmm. Because without that, you have nothing.
That's right. And that pretty much sums up the get-together.
Yes.
As well, right there.
Yes.
That's great. Thanks very much. That was Gabe Blackstone. And for the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.